Miss an interview? Listen to it now at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business, so should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Sports Radio 1043 The Fan presents Dan Jacobs.
Want to stay in the sun where I find I know it's hard sometimes.
All right, straight out to the hotline. James Merrillet joins us from 1043thefan.com. Mr. Merrillet, how are you on this beautiful Saturday?
I'm good, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, appreciate it. So we've got a couple things to talk about that we've talked about before, but I couldn't believe, and it did get some play throughout the rest of the week, and you know, of course, Chris Harris Jr. went to walk it back, but we were talking about on the show, I couldn't believe, at least initially in the aftermath of when Kisla tweeted it out, the Chris Harris Jr. comments about, well, I got 13 weeks left to go, given the ramifications of his contract, how that led to the disastrous restructure of Joe Flacco. To me, that was a huge story. Your thoughts on this whole Chris Harris Jr. debacle?
No, I'm with you. I think it's been very underplayed, undercovered, whatever you want to talk about. It's part of the reason why, and I think you and I are on the same page on this, I call them the Dove Valley Minions because they tend to just, not talk about these kind of things because the team doesn't like these kind of things. But it's a big story. I think, you know, back in the good old days of the Denver Post and the Rocky Mountain News and the newspaper war and Jay Mariotti and Terry Thompson and all those kind of people, they would have been all over this story. That would have been, it would have carried on throughout the week. Cause it's a big deal. It's a guy that, you know, and I wrote about it 3 weeks ago of, you know, apparently giving Chris Harris Jr. $3 million free gift didn't do much cause he's already chirping. And then, you know, the next week he goes out and says something like that. It's just indicative of the bad veteran leadership this team has. I mean, Chris Harris Jr. is one of those guys, and he's just there for the paycheck and for his next contract. Von Miller, I know he had a better game, but, man, he still stands around and watches an awful lot. Emmanuel Sanders is a guy that quit on his team for three plays late in the game in Green Bay and chucked his helmet and was mad after the game because he didn't get enough targets. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. It's time to turn the page. Super Bowl 50 is in the rearview mirror. They kept the wrong guys, let the right guys leave. So it's time to, you know, turn it over to the young core and see what can happen. But no, I'm with you. I think it was a big deal. It was undercovered, and I think it's just it spoke volumes about what kind of guy Chris Harris Jr. is in terms of a teammate and a member of this organization.
Well, and we knew when the Broncos made what was reported was the Broncos made almost no attempts to even try and get a long-term deal with him. So when they gifted him $3 million, and we now know, but because they gave him that money, it took him up to the cap, and then they had to have Theo Riddick for $1.5 million, which got him over the cap. So then they redid Joe Flacco, which is a disaster now. Is it even worse now in hindsight, knowing that Chris Harris Jr. has no intention of coming back here, that the $3 million didn't even get you some goodwill? Does it even, in hindsight now, look even worse to give him that money?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, at the very least, given the fact that they didn't have to do anything for him, right? Like, his options were play for $9 million and change or make nothing. Like, he was under contract. And they gave him that $3 million to try and keep him happy. The very least he could have done was come in and, you know, sort of the proverbial be a good soldier, right? Be a positive influence on guys when things are going bad. Stay upbeat, you know, play hard, all those kind of things. And he's not doing it. So it's like, well, you know, it's like that relationship with a big new diamond ring and that lasts, you know, about, you know, boy, that was a bad expenditure. That's what this was. John Elway gave him a big fancier ring, hoping it would keep him happy, and it just didn't work.
Now, James, I'm actually going to give you a hard time because I'm going to lump you in with, I call them the Broncos suck-up media. You call them the Broncos minions. But I'm lumping you in with them on a particular issue because we were on the program last week. We had you on the program. And to me, it was crystal clear that this team was a team cracking. You had Emmanuel Sanders with his nonsense. You've had Chris Harris chirping. You had Philip Lindsay insulting the fan base. And then Von Miller with his nonsense. And I would expect you to be with me on this. But no, last week you said, no, I like it. He's focused and yada, yada, yada. And in hindsight, I was right. And you guys were wrong. And that was just, this is a team in disarray. And it's cracking. And I only see it getting uglier. And so I wanted to give you an opportunity to at least, you know, do a mea culpa.
Well, just to set the record straight, I was in favor of what Von Miller did. I said, no, it's me. It's just like what he did last year before the Arizona game.
Right, you were wrong. You were wrong on it, yeah.
He had two sacks. He had his best game. Like, Von Miller wasn't the problem against the Jaguars.
He wasn't?
I also ripped.
When did those sacks,
no.
Those fourth quarter sacks really helped? Did the pass okay. interference penalty, or the roughing the passer penalty help?
Well, okay.
Where was he in the fourth quarter when they needed to win?
Other than hitting the quarterback and causing the fumble, and it bounced right back up to him, and he was right there, and it's just an unfortunate break. But look, uh-huh. if you think Von Miller was the problem on Sunday, okay, then I don't know what kind of performance you expect from guys that is going to turn into winning football. But, you know, you can go on 1043thefan.com. You can find the story where I ripped Philip Lindsay for his cliche fest. So, look, I thought they were going to win last week. I told you a week ago right now that they were going to roll, and man, for a half, I looked pretty good, and then it all just fell apart. So, you know, they're just a team that they're mentally soft. You know, when an interception that takes it from being 20-3 makes it 17-6, and you're up 11 at halftime, and you've collapsed because of that, you're just a mentally soft football team. So you were right on that front. They are a team that's coming apart at the seams. I thought they had one, you know, kind of last swing in them. I just figured it'd be a game, not a half. But no, you're right. This is a team in disarray, and you know, I think they're headed toward a debacle unlike anything we've seen in these long time. How's that? Is that better?
Yeah, there we go. You know, I love you, James. I got to give you a hard time because nobody else does.
It's fine.
Something you said, which is normally, and you're right, Von Miller was not the problem. All I'm saying is this isn't the game-wrecking Von Miller that won the Super Bowl. And this is stat-chasing Von Miller, and that's what we're seeing. What you said was, if you think Von Miller is the problem, what I've really heard that from a lot is for Joe Flacco. Like, everybody's like, if you think Joe Flacco is the problem, you got an issue. But then you said something that nobody, again, this love affair with, you know, Vic Fangio and Joe Flacco, and they get a pass, and Von Miller and everybody else takes all the heat. You mentioned it. After the interception, it was a game-turning interception. They fell apart. After that interception, they had three punts, they had that pick, and they had one touchdown. They fell apart after that Joe Flacco, that kind of inexplicable Joe Flacco interception. They fell apart, and they did almost nothing offensively until the very end. Why does this guy get a pass?
Yeah. Well, you know, and it was a terrible interception, very similar to a terrible interception he had the week before in Green Bay. He had a terrible interception at the goal line against Chicago. So I'm not making excuses for Joe Flacco. I'm just saying, you know, having a lead go from what should have been 20-3 to 17-6 shouldn't make you collapse. Here's the one thing I will say, and I think this is fair. After he threw the pick, you know, Jacksonville gets the field goal, then they get the opening kickoff and go 10 and a half minutes with the football. Like, that's not on Flacco. That's on the defense. So, you know, it's a team that's supposed to be built around defense. That's how they're supposed to win. Joe Flacco in 2 out of 4 games has set them up with a lead in the final seconds of the game. He was great on both those final drives, and the defense couldn't hold it. So, you know, if you spend all your money on Peyton Manning and offensive weapons and you're losing games 17-14, you can't blame the defense. If you spend all your money or most of your money and you're supposed to be a defensive-minded team and they can't hold late leads, it's on the defense at this point. Doesn't mean Flacco doesn't deserve any of the grief. You know, and I think some of the plays you saw Gardner Minshew make on that long 10.5-minute drive that, you know, converted to 3rd and 15, got him into the end zone. Broncos settle for field goals on those plays because Joe Flacco has no escapability. That's the part of 2019 football that he just doesn't bring to the table. But he's done it. He's done what I think was realistically expected of him. And he's been good enough to win, certainly in probably 3 out of the 4 games.
Yeah, good enough to win is one. It's just what I would like to see out of a quarterback, when you throw a bad interception like that, I don't want you to be a ghost until the final drive.
Sure.
You know, he completely disappeared. You saw nothing from him until that drive.
After the 10.5-minute drive, the offense has to answer, and they went 3 and out. So that's on them. And then the defense gives up another drive. I mean, the Broncos, between the interception, up 17-3, between the interception and being behind, ran 3 offensive plays. I mean, just remarkable. He made just disastrous plays up in Green Bay. The fumble was bad. You got to take care of the football, especially when you're into the field. The interception was bad. He missed Cortland Sutton on what would have been a 50-yard touchdown that, I mean, there's Brett Rippon can make that throw. It was wide open, and he threw it out of bounds. So he doesn't deserve a free pass. He's not Teflon Joe. Don't paint me that way. But it's just, you know, I think you have seen the difference between Case Keenum and Trevor Siemian and a guy like Flacco on those final drives. Because how many times last year did Keenum have a chance to do it and couldn't do it? Joe Flacco's 2 for 2 in those kind of pressure situations. They just have nothing to show for it.
Well, in fairness, didn't Keenum, they had 6 wins. Weren't all of those wins, for the most part, Keenum coming down and driving them to victories? I'm trying to remember.
I remember having Demaryius Thomas wide open for a touchdown against the Chiefs, and he missed him.
Well, yeah, but in the wins that they did have, he drove them down and won, I think, on all of them, didn't he?
Well, they won 45-10 in Arizona.
So there's one game-saving drive in that one. Yeah.
I don't remember a last-minute Case Keenum pulled it out of his hat. They went from losing to winning because he let him on a last-second drive.
He ran one in against Oakland first week in Denver and hurt his knee.
And then also the Chargers game, I know they drove him back. So we don't need to get into a big Case Keenum fest here. Last thing for you, James. A lot of conversation about John Elway. We're still hearing, and this is not surprising, for example, from an Adam Schefter, because we know they're buddies, but we're still hearing this. Who's going to fire John Elway? He's untouchable, this, that, and the other. What do you think, realistically, if they continue? I mean, they could end up with 2 wins, 2 to 4 wins. What's your take on the John Elway situation?
I think if they end up with that kind of season, I think one of 2 things is going to happen. Either John walks away and, says, look, I don't want to do this anymore, bring somebody else in. He's too competitive and too stubborn, I think, to do that, but that's a possibility. Or they let him stay, but it's, hey, you're going to go back to being the, president of football operations like you were when you started, and you had Brian Sanders as your general manager, and they're going to make him bring somebody else in to help him with that stuff. So I do not think if they go 2-14, 3-13, whatever you want to call a disastrous season, another double-digit loss season, which they're well on their way to, I don't think there's any chance they go into 2020 with the same exact front office setup and configuration that they have now. It'd be foolish if they did. It'd be 3 straight disastrous seasons. That's just the definition of insanity, right?
Well, here's my question, though, because I was thinking about that, because I was along the same lines. Like, my thinking had always been, well, you're not going to fire John Elway. You're gonna make him a figurehead. However,
right,
if you bring in a Brian Sanders or the kid from the Rams or whoever you want to bring in, or a guy from the Niners, they're talking about, that guy has to report to Joe Ellis, right? Like, and will John Elway's ego allow a situation like that to happen? You can't bring in Brian Sanders back or whoever you bring in and still have him report to Elway, because then Elway still has all the power, right?
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to figure out how the hierarchy works. You're right, because if he's at the top of the football side of things, which is president of football operations, he would be. What really changes? So it's either who do you report to, or it has to be pretty clearly defined by Joe Ellis of, well, who ultimately gets to make this decision? If, GM TBD wants to go this direction in the draft and John Elway wants to go this direction, GM TBD has to have that final say. So I don't know if John would go for that, and that does make for a sticky situation, but I don't see him getting fired, and I don't see it being the exact same setup. So they're going to have to figure some configuration out that works.
Well, that's why I think it could become a Patrick Waugh situation where Elway's ego will not allow him to say, no, I get the final, if I don't get the final say, I'm out of here. I mean, could you see it going down like that?
Yeah. And, that may be a tricky way for Joe Ellis to force him to leave, right? It wouldn't be the first time somebody's been forced out by giving them an offer they have to refuse. So, yeah, I could definitely see that happening. And, look, they're most likely heading down that path. And, really, you know, they're almost to the point this year, and it's a shame that Drew Lock is on IR, because they're almost to the point where it's, you just need to use 2019 to get a jump start on 2020, so you're not starting from scratch. And hard to believe we're saying that on October 5th, but that's the case.
Yep. All right, James, I wish we had two more segments, but we got to let you go. Thanks, as always, for the great effort.
Yeah, it's always fun. Have a great rest of the weekend.
All right, James Merrillat from 1043thefan.com. Catch all of his work right there. He brings the heat. We like James Merrillat. All right, it's the Dan Jacobs Show here on The Fan.
You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC.
First Bank.
Banking for good.